Well, again, everybody, welcome to another exciting edition of the Chicago Bullseye. In this episode, we have an interview with Stephen Noe, the great writer for The Athletic. He joined the Chicago Bullseye to talk all things Bulls. This was actually recorded before the finals were over, so I hope you enjoy it, but most of the talk is primarily on the beloved Bull. Some of his comments, some of his articles, he's just a fantastic, knowledgeable Bulls writer, and we encourage you to check him out at The Athletic, which is a fantastic site I highly recommend. In the interim, in the following next week, we're going to have some Bulls draft talk, some prospect analysis in the next couple days. So I hope you enjoy that as it comes up. Until then, all the best. Follow me on Twitter at CBE Fred, C-Red Fred, at CBE Fred.
For the start out, I thought it would be a good idea to maybe just give a little 411 and, you know, your history as a Bulls fan and how you became a writer for The Athletic.
So, pretty typical story. You know, I grew up in Chicago. Jordan era, I was like in middle school, so I didn't quite get to appreciate the first three-peat as much as the second one, but I mean, if you grew up in Chicago around that time, like, you're just automatically a Bulls fan, and I just, like, really loved basketball. I was drawn to it, so I stuck with the team through the dark ages, too. And then when Derrick Rose, you know, got drafted, and I know that's around where you guys started this podcast, this team became really, really interesting. I started, you know, watching every single game really closely, started writing stuff in my spare time just, like, for free, just, like, trying to spread this passion. And then, yeah, I eventually got hired to write about the team, and I've been doing that for about 2 years for The Athletic.
So let's get into the topics at hand for the Bulls. And I guess the first one would be, I'd love to have your opinion on, you know, the trade Jimmy, keep Jimmy, you know, mantra that we hear. Where do you lie on that argument?
Well, I think it really depends very strongly on what your mentality is as a fan. Like, there's a lot of fans who are in this championship or bust ideology, and I think that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. And then there's other fans who just want, like, an entertaining product to watch and would rather not put up with, you know, years of Sixer-style losing to try to get that, like, 2 or 3 year window where you can really have a great chance at a championship. So I kind of fall like right in between. I think I could go either way. Do want to win a championship? I mean, I think that it's way more likely to get to that point if you trade Butler. I mean, like, we're seeing this year with the Warriors, you just can't win a title the way that NBA rules are constructed right now without at least, like, 2 top 10 players. And there's just not really a feasible way to get that without going through the draft. And, you know, the only way the Bulls are going to get these top picks are they bottom out, and if they trade Butler for maybe, like, at least a couple chances at, you know, a top 5 pick there.
Yes, Steph, it's a tough call because, I mean, I know you said you went through the Kraus years, the post-Jordan Kraus years, and most of the millennials I talk to don't even remember that. You know, they say they do, but they really don't. And, you know, I was in my 20s when that was going on, and I remember how disastrous that was and truly helpless, the feeling of helplessness. And it's not enjoyable at all, and for the last, you know, 13 seasons, we've had one losing season. So, you know, you think you know what it's like, but you really don't. You know what I mean? And to bottom out, like the Sixers have and a lot of these teams in Minnesota for the last 13 years, it sometimes you just bottom out forever, it seems like. And I don't think I'm on that train unless you get something in return for Jimmy that's worthwhile. And Celtics weren't willing to unprotect that pick. Why make that trade? You know, I think about how ridiculous it would have been if the Bulls traded the Celtics and they weren't willing to protect that pick, you know. So I kind of feel if there's a deal good enough to do it, then you do it. Otherwise, we'll just keep on trying to find a way to build around them.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And I respect so many people you ask, and they give you the championship of bust attitude, like you were saying. So it's just refreshing to hear somebody. I feel like people who say it like you're saying it, kind of like, it's like I feel like you get it. Like you have instant credibility with me because at the end of the day, we could try. I agree with kind of what Fred's saying, where it's like, okay, if we get enough pieces where there's enough of a light where it looks like, okay, this is a foundation to build on, because Jimmy, I think, 27 or 28, that, you know, fine. But otherwise, we could suck forever if we get rid of them and just try to, like, tank it and get picks. There's no guarantees you're ever going to get anything.
I mean, you have to be really, really patient if you're willing to go with that bottom-out approach. Like, I mean, how many years did it take the Sixers to get to this point? I mean, 3 years of Hinkie and then 1 year of Colangelo, where they were just so brutal to watch. But now, I mean, their situation is awesome. But, I mean, that was a really...
Is it really?
Years
in- yeah, is it really? They still suck. I mean, there's like, I don't get, oh, the Sixers, what have the Sixers done? That's really... They still suck.
We don't know yet that they didn't even have a single player yet. That's a foundation player. It looks like Embiid might be that, but he's already missed a full season. He missed half of this year. We don't know what we got with Ben Simmons. I mean, a lot of teams, I feel, you get that, like, glimpse, where people are like, okay, like the Timberwolves, for example, where it's like, all right, they've drafted all these top, you know, top-tier guys. They're starting to look like they might be good. And you might have a couple that actually do pan out, like a Devin Booker in Phoenix or something, where it's like, okay, they're putting up numbers. They look to be good, but the team still sucks forever, and they're never able to get past the hump because you really need somebody transcendent, I feel, to really elevate and build a team around. Because there's a lot of really good players in the league, I feel. There's just not a lot that are like of that elite stature, yeah, that where the team's going to be automatically, where you have a foundation to potentially win a championship. Look at now, man. Like, I feel like right now even, like, nobody thinks that anybody's going to win for the next 7 years besides the Golden State Warriors. Like, and there's a lot of, you know, even the teams that have a great player are like, well, yeah, nobody's going to win right now besides the Warriors. Nobody has a chance.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you. Like, I think that's what makes the Sixers situation so appealing is, I mean, they have a great pick this year. They have the third pick. They have the Lakers' unprotected pick next year. And it's going to take a while to ramp that team up. And, I mean, as you said, like, and it's kind of doesn't make a lot of sense to go for a ring, like, in the next 2 or 3 years because you just know the Warriors are going to dominate everyone. So maybe it makes sense to kind of target that window. I think that's like a little bit of what the Bulls are doing too when they say that, you know, they're going for this 2018 plan, at least in theory. That's like what they want to try to do is wait out LeBron and hopefully wait out the Warriors, let them age out a little bit.
It's such a difficult situation now when you see the Warriors and look, all these great players in their prime, but I always say tomorrow is guaranteed to no one. You know, just it's one major injury away from it being open again. You know, like if Durant gets hurt or one of the big guys gets hurt or just think about in the East, if for once he's never been hurt, but God forbid he's starting to get a little bit older. If something happens to LeBron, look how bad the Cavs have been without that guy in the lineup. I mean, they didn't win a game, I don't believe, this season without him. Their numbers up when he's off the court are horrific. There's the delta between the Bulls and a LeBronless Cavs and everyone else in the East that big that you don't think they have a chance?
At like getting to the Eastern Conference Finals next year, or just like in the immediate? I mean, I think they can get there with Butler in the next couple years if they rebuild around him. But if they do what they're planning to do and just bring the three alphas back, I mean, I know you guys are like pretty big optimists here, but you have to put like at least a couple teams ahead of them, even like if you take LeBron off the Cavs, right?
Well, let's stop there for a second. So hold on, I know Mark disagrees with me on this one. If Rondo doesn't get hurt, do you feel the Celtics still win that series?
That's tough to say. I don't know. I think it's close. Like, if you just look historically at teams with a 2-0 lead, like, it's overwhelming that that team ends up winning the series. Like, the Bulls had such a huge lead. I think, like, if you just started the series over from scratch, then the Celtics probably win. But the Bulls with that 2-0 lead and with Rondo, just how big of a drop-off they had with those replacement point guards. I mean, I think they're probably favored to beat the Celtics there.
Yeah, I agree completely. And to me, the biggest drop-off was on the rebound, and they thoroughly dominated the first two games on the boards, and that's because Rondo is one of the best rebounding guards in the NBA, if not the best. And, I mean, he had more rebounds than most of the Celtic forwards combined. And, you know, you lose a rebounder like that, and the other two guys aren't even in the same league. And so, you know, that's why I'm like, I don't feel like this helplessness that I think is so just so rampant with the fan base. Like, oh my God, this is the worst experience. I don't understand it. I don't understand it at all. There's no bad contract. If you look at almost every team in the East, you can find one horrific contract. Look at the Wizards with Mahimi. Even the Raptors, I question some of their deals. You know, you go up and down, you'll find a bad contract. Yeah, Horford making $30 million in 2020. You know, so I don't see why. I guess my question for you, Steph, is What do you feel? I mean, do you feel like this is just a helpless situation, or do you think maybe the negativity is a little bit overblown?
I mean, again, it depends on what your goals are. I think that if you just want to build an entertaining team, it really they're really not that far away. Like Jimmy Butler's top 10 player, you know, just him alone on the team got them to where they were. If they can just build around him and get some shooters, I think that they could be like a, you know, like a 4 or 5 seed next year. I mean, that's not going to happen because they're going to bring back the exact same group, it sounds like. But I think that, like, if they just approach things, like, a little bit more from a modern angle, then, yeah, you could have something really interesting here. Like, as you said, they have a lot of cap space. I think they have, like, a lot more room to work with than they think. If they, you know, if they let Rondo go, they have $10 million in cap space open. If they move on from Mirotić, you know, that's another, like, $11 million in cap space that they can clear off the books. So right there, you're looking at $21 million you can spend on some three-point shooting. So that's what I would do. I think that they could be interesting if they do that, but I just don't have confidence that that is what they're going to pursue.
So you want Mirotić, you want him out of here?
It's a tough question with Mirotić because it's okay if you let him walk, but you have to replace that three-point shooting somehow. I mean, he was not a great three-point shooter. I know that you guys are not super high on his three-point shooting, but it depends on how they spend that money that they're saving with Mirotić, right? Like, if they can get a guy like Patty Mills or just any three-point shooting, consistent volume three-point shooting, then it's fine to let him go, but they just haven't really done that well in the free agent market in recent years, so I am a little bit nervous, I guess, that they're not going to be able to replace him if they let him walk.
So here's another area where I disagree, because I hear this all the time. The Bulls haven't done well in the free agent market. So they got the number one. We all know Ben Wallace was number one in that year 10 years ago, right? So we're looking at a decade out. He was clearly the number one free agent. Regardless of what we feel about Carlos Boozer, he was a top five free agent. Paul Gasol was the second most desired free agent in 2015. Every major contender, the Thunder, the Spurs, wanted him. He took less money to come to Chicago. And then, you know, Wade, regardless of how you feel he played last year, is still, I would consider, a desirable free agent, you know, a guy you'd want to play for your city, represent your city. I don't understand this idea that we're just, like, not attracting anybody good, or that we're nothing but strikeouts with free agents. Yeah, we missed out in the big three. Everyone did, and, you know, besides, obviously, Miami. But I don't. That's another like kind of thing that I keep on hearing, that you know we're not going to get any free agents, and I just don't see it.
And so just to add to what Fred said, you also saw that we were in contention a lot of times for a top free agent. Like when like Carmelo was a free agent, or even when LeBron was a free agent, they all considered us and they all talked to us. And you see that a lot of times when these guys go up for free agency, that there's teams that want to talk to them that they won't even talk to. I mean, I agree with Fred to the extent that we've always been able to fill in typically gaps that we've had by getting, you know, a pretty decent free agent. I mean, at the end of the day, the best free agents want to go to the best situation, and let's just be honest. I mean, like, obviously, the Miami situation, we couldn't top. Last offseason, we never could have even tried to make a run at a guy like Kevin Durant. So, I mean, I definitely would say that in terms of free agent signings, I would think that we're in the top third of teams in terms of being able to attract and gather free agents, in my personal opinion. It's tough. Like, if there's a lot of everybody's, like, all of the talent seems to be in only a couple places.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem with free agency is, like, you can be in the top third and still, you know, miss out on Kevin Durant, and then, like, it doesn't really matter, right? I mean, that's why I was saying, like, if you really believe that you want the Bulls to win a championship, the best way to do it is through the draft. I mean, it's just so difficult to attract top-tier free agents, the way that the rules are structured and just the way the players' incentives work these days. I mean, why would they pick Chicago over another city? I mean, like, we all grew up in Chicago. It's a great city. But, you know, when you have these options of, like, states like Florida, where the tax rules are more lenient, or just situations where they have a better chance of winning, like, it's just, I don't think it's rational to think that the Bulls are going to be, like, the number one free agent source. And I think it's more reasonable to think that you can get a superstar through the draft and just, like, try to depend on that rather than outbidding these other teams.
I can't really think of a situation in the last 20 years where a team has won a title based on strictly, like, really just putting it together via free agency. I mean, I've seen trades where you've been able to get that extra piece that kind of put you over. I mean, the Warriors, obviously, you know, Durant's been around now for a decade and he hasn't won a title.
Well, Jazz,
I mean,
too, right?
The Warriors.
Irving was drafted.
I mean, the Heat were built on free agency, but.
That's the only one.
They did have Dwayne Wade. I mean, they did draft him. I guess I see what you're saying, Mark. You know, completely on free agency. I don't think that's what the Bulls are trying to do.
You're right. That's collusion.
But think about this also. Like, everybody jumped into free agency this year but the Bulls. When the Bulls sat out, how smart was that in retrospect? Harrison Barnes. Look at all these horrific long-term contracts signed. Harrison Barnes.
Barnes good.
Chandler Parsons, I wouldn't want any peep at Harrison Barnes. Evan Turner, think about it. Even Noah. Timothy Mozgov, Dang. Look at all these, Cole Aldrich, all these horrific deals signed. And the Bulls rightly said, you know what, we're going to keep our powder keg dry. We're going to pass on all these guys, despite people. Even I heard a lot of Bulls fans want Mahimi. Look at that horrific contract. I think they've been successful in who they've targeted and who they've not. Even I look back at Gasol, everybody acts like that was a disaster. He was an all-star in his first year. He was double-teamed every time he touched the ball in the post against Milwaukee in the playoffs. If you're signing a free agent for $7 million a year and he's attracting a double-team in the playoffs, every time he touches the ball, that's a good signing. You know, I don't view Paul Gasol as a bad signing. I know most people do, but I don't know. I think the negativity is overblown, and it goes to Tom Thibodeau, which brings me to my next question. What did you feel about Big Tom and his departure from the Chicago Bulls? Do you think it was the right decision? And I don't think you're a Hoiberg fan, but I'd like to get your take on Fred.
I know we're going to disagree on this because I am like a huge Thibodeau homer. I think that it was like a pretty massive mistake. I think you can like directly trace back a lot of the Bulls' current problems to how in love they fell with Hoiberg and just how disappointing that he's been now. I think he was ranked like 30th out of 30 coaches in that ESPN poll. I think that's probably being like a little bit too harsh. Clearly, like he does not have any semblance of the kind of roster that he wanted or had at Iowa State. But at the same time, like if you just look at the job that he's done with what he's been given, it really, I can't think of like a single thing that he's done particularly well. I do want to wait to see what he can do with a roster that better fits his style before I just completely give up on him.
I can think of one thing he did really well, and it's the following. This playoffs was the first time I can remember that the Bulls came in rested and healthy for the most part. He sacrificed wins by refraining to overplay Wade, who only averaged 30 minutes a game. He only averaged 18 points. He sacrificed wins by sitting them out. I felt like this was the first. Think about it. Look how healthy we were. And, of course, yeah, Rondo broke his finger. That's bad luck. That has nothing to do with an injury due to guys being, overplayed or hurt. Every stinking playoff under Thibodeau, there were guys playing insane amount of minutes and crawling in their playoff shirt, whether it's against the Wizards and Noah, his MVP year. He was half the guy he was because he was playing so much. Or Taj, or guys always walking in the playoffs hurt. Did you feel like, I mean, in this league where everybody was talking about how they're resting players, and in the last two games of the season, he plays Towns 40 minutes on the front night of a back-to-back and follows that up with 37 in a quest for 32 wins. Like, doesn't that give you pause to say, what the hell is wrong with this guy?
I think you are 100% right. Like, I used to kill Thibodeau about the minutes thing, too. I still do. I mean, that is definitely a flaw in his philosophy that you cannot cover up. At the same time, like, you have to have the same metrics for both coaches. Like, Jimmy Butler, I think, was third in the league in minutes per game this season, and you said the Bulls were healthy in the playoffs. I mean, Butler hurt his knee midway through that series, and he didn't look the same in some of those games. You could tell that it was affecting him. So, I mean, I think that if you're going to criticize Thibodeau, you have to do the same for Hoiberg. And next year, for sure. I mean, I wrote about this in, like, the first 2 months of the season that Butler was going to get hurt in the middle to late stages of the season, and he wasn't going to be 100% coming into the playoffs, and that's what happened. He missed, I think he missed like 15 or 20 games this year, just various things, and then his knee just was not right for this first round series.
I don't know. I didn't really see. He might not even hurt for the playoffs, but his best game was Game 6. He looked great at certain periods, not so great at others. I agree. Yeah, he played a lot of minutes. For total minutes, he wasn't near the top, but for average, he was in the top 10. But for a 3 or a 2, I have no problem with that. If it's a center like Joaquin Noah, I have a major issue with it. I have a major issue with Towns being top 2 in the league in total minutes. I think that's just absolutely insane. Centers aren't supposed to be playing that amount of minutes. So, I don't know. I just felt like that issue is so bad that, nobody wants to talk about it. But I can guarantee you, Towns' agent and his family, Towns hasn't been paid yet. They were furious, I'm certain, about him playing 40 minutes on the front end of back-to-back in a meaningless game at the end of the season. And I don't think he'll ever sign a major free agent unless it's Taj Gibson or Derrick Rose, and he overpays for that.
That might be the case, right? There's rumors.
He's going to sign one of those two. I mean, look at every guy he targeted last year. They all saved him from the embarrassment. He targeted Noah, targeted Dang. Look how bad those potential free agents would have been. And he went after all of them. The guy, I don't know. He's beloved here, and I do feel he's a great coach. But as far as, I do also take issue with, he seemed to get so much credit when you had two of the best interior defenders in Noah and Taj Gibson. Derrick Rose approaching MVP level, Luol Deng, Kyle Korver, a ton of great players on this team in the last 5 years, But I digress. Sorry about that. I just got a little bit off topic. I did want to get into your last article about Justin Jackson. I'm going to read a couple. First of all, I recommend everybody to check out The Athletic and check out your work there, especially this article on Justin Jackson, who I happen to really like. Now, one of the quotes you had in the article, quote unquote, "The Bulls have drafted a lot of upperclassmen from well-known programs since Vice President John Paxson joined the ranks of management in 2003. Kirk Heinrich, Ben Gordon, Joaquin Noah, Taj Gibson, Jimmy Butler, Doug McDermott, and Denzel Valentine all fit into that mold. So does Jackson, who's entering the draft after 3 years of college." Isn't that paragraph a ringing endorsement of why they should draft him?
Kind of depends on your point of view. I don't think that it's a negative that he went to a big program, but, age is becoming, a lot more valued in drafts. I think the biggest concern from Jackson is just that he experienced such a big leap in his junior year. His freshman and sophomore years, he really was not that impressive. He wanted to come into the draft as a sophomore, but he kind of tested the waters, and it looked like he was not going to get picked very high after being a really good prospect in high school too. I think he was a top 10 prospect in high school. So just the fact that he had this one outlier year, it's a little bit worrying to me that you just have to think how real was that year, and how much can you discount those previous 2 years?
Okay, I think it's a good. So you're not a fan of them taking him. You would prefer if he's there at 16. You do not want the Bulls to go after him.
I should preface this by saying too that I'm not a draft expert at all. There's a lot of people who watch a lot of college basketball. If I had to suggest one, it's just Ricky O'Donnell, who writes for SB Nation. But just from the stuff that I've read, I do read a lot about the draft. I watch all these Draft Express videos like everybody else. Justin Jackson is not a guy that the models like very much. I don't know. He just seems a very low upside player, which if the Bulls are going to get a lot better, challenge the Cavs like you want, they're saying that they need to do that through internal improvement. And I don't think that you're going to get a star with Jackson. That's my concern.
No, part of the article, they'll just try to get a star at the point in the draft that they're going to be at anyways. It's happened, but I think you just try to go for the best player available, cross your fingers, and hope for the best.
That was kind of my question or issue with the article a little bit, is some of the comments that, here's one too. The Bulls have fallen in love with physically limited players that dominate the college level because of their high IQ and older age, only to see that their talents couldn't translate to the next level against better athletes. And, one clearly that I think you're describing know, so are those the two players you're referring to?
I mean, primarily, yeah, but it's not just the Bulls, and it's not just those guys that have that problem. I mean, the fact is, the athletes at the college level are not really comparable to the athletes at the NBA level, so you really have to factor that in when you're looking at these guys, I think.
Yeah, that's true. I don't feel that the Bulls have fallen in love with physically limited players. Like, if you go back just a little, you know, past that, the athlete James Johnson, fantastic athlete. Tyrus Thomas, fantastic athlete. Jimmy Butler, fantastic athlete. I don't think they've been hesitant necessarily to draft athletes. I think when you're picking that late, like they have in the last 5-10 years, I think you're better off just taking the best available player. And a lot of times, some of these really good players fall because they're not stellar athletes. In that case, I felt McDermott fell, you know, even though he was one of the best college players of all time. And Denzel Valentine, I still believe in. I know I'm on an island here. But he had an ankle injury that really limited him, I felt. And he's not a horrific athlete. It's like he has length, which covers up a lot of issues when it comes to athleticism. And I don't know. I'm a lot higher on him than you are. But I get your point. I do also agree with that. But I don't think Bobby Portis was a bad pick at 22. Great athlete, no. But he wasn't old. He's still a young kid. I still think that kid showed quite a bit of improvement this year.
Yeah, I think people are, like, pretty hard on Portis. I mean, he was really bad defensively. But if you look at his offensive numbers, I mean, he had a pretty decent year. And this is something that John Paxson has repeated so often. Like, Mark, you just said this too. Like, you can't set your expectations, like, so insanely high when you're picking in the middle of a draft like this. So I think there's still plenty of reason to be high on Portis. I am, like, much lower on Valentine, just because, like, I thought it was troubling that he couldn't get by anybody. Like, he just couldn't drive past anybody. Couldn't get to the rim at all. Like, he's just taking so many floaters and so many fadeaway jumpers when he wasn't spotting up, and that really worries me. That shows me that there were these concerns about his athleticism coming into the draft, and then, like, I feel like he just confirmed that in his rookie year. But who knows how much of that was his ankle injury? I know that wasn't right, so I'm hopeful, I guess, that was the cause of just why he couldn't get by anyone.
Mm-hmm. Great. A little bit of final talk. I'd like to get your opinion on how shocked are you about how dominant the Warriors have been in these playoffs, and is this what you expected, or did you expect a better fight from the Cavs overall?
This is kind of what I expected. I'm a big proponent of looking at these models, and they were saying that the Warriors were, like, pretty much the best team assembled. I mean, like, basically you're just swapping out Harrison Barnes' role with Kevin Durant, and Durant is, like, such a turbocharged version of Barnes. I mean, just made sense, like, from a fit perspective on paper, and it's looking like the only thing that's going to stop them is some major injury, God forbid.
Yeah, it's a shame.
How do you feel about, so I'm struggling with this with the Warriors. Like, I wanted to hate them, and, you know, like, the Heat, I kind of hated them at first, like, the Heat, where it's like, oh, Durant went there, you know, you're going to the 73-win team, you know, it's this manufactured sort of super team. Then I got to thinking about it, and it's like, all the Warriors really did was sign one free agent. Like, they drafted that entire team, they drafted a 73-win team, and they made it a desirable situation for one guy, who happened to be Kevin Durant, to go to. Like, do you feel this is really a Miami Heat sort of manufactured situation, or is this something where, should I not hate this team? Like, is this really like a legit... Because people are arguing, like, should this be allowed? Like, should the league allow these sorts of things? And I'm kind of like, well, how do you kind of stop this? They managed the cap well. They were a team that was able to afford a top-tier free agent. And so what do you think?
I think the Warriors are just making the league really, really boring. I mean, we kind of knew the outcome of this season, like, before any of the games were played, which, I don't know, like, the reason I watch sports is for the drama and for those moments where you really don't know what the outcome is and you're just on the edge of your seat. And also, like, I don't really care what the Warriors do, honestly. Like, I told you guys at the start of this show that I grew up in Chicago as a Bulls fan. Really, like, I'm just focused on the Bulls and what other teams in the league do. Like,
I really don't care that much, honestly.
So this Golden State Warriors issue, though, and this goes for both of you guys, is this a league? I get that it's an issue for fans, especially more casual, you know, just whatever. Any fan of any team doesn't want to see the Warriors win for the next 6 years. Is there something that the league needs to look at here that they need to change so that you can't get dominance like this? Or was this just dominance that just happened to come by? Did good management make some dominance here that's just annoying to all of us because they are so dominant? Can this be controlled? It's really just because Steph Curry's on such a bad contract. Because, when you get lucky like this and you lock up somebody, like, you know, Jimmy at first, when, like, they had really turned into what they became when they got that contract, that's striking gold. I mean, Steph Curry's making $12 million right now. Next year it's going to be a different situation, but right now he's making $12 million. That's how you got Durant.
I think the easiest way to fix this problem, like, I think there really does need to be more parity to make the league more interesting, and the easiest way to do it is to institute a hard cap. I don't know why they haven't done this before, but, you know, the reason why they're able to keep these teams together, I understand that, like, people grow attached to the players on their team, and the NBA wants to incentivize, like, being able to keep them so you can keep on following the players you like, but at the same time, it allows these teams to stay together when these guys really start outperforming their contracts. And if you just set a hard cap, then you're going to force teams to make really hard choices and make sure that every team has a chance to, you know, spend the free agent dollars in a way that they can actually, like, try to outbid other teams for these free agents.
Guys, I want to throw something out at you because I have a question for you, and I'd like to get your opinion on it. I have a theory. LeBron has stated in the past that he wants the Nana Boat team together for a run. And think about how, especially if they get swept, think about how devastating and angry he's going to be after this. Here's a way to make it work.
Yesterday.
You have Wade opt in, and you trade Kevin Love for Dwayne Wade. You trade Tristan Thompson for Melo, and you're going to have to throw someone else in there from the Cavs perspective. And then, guess Chris Paul's a free agent. So you somehow figure out a way to make that work. What do you think of that idea? And would you trade Wade for Kevin Love?
Dwayne Wade is nowhere near as good as Kevin Love at this point of his career. What do you think?
I would do that in a heartbeat. I mean, like, yeah. Wade doesn't fit the team's window at all. Like, Love is much younger, much better. Be like a total no-brainer.
I don't think that gets you close. I don't think there's anything that Cleveland can do, like, realistically, that will make them be able to compete with Golden State. They are way, way far away. And the problem is,
Melo, Chris Paul, Dwayne Wade, and LeBron would be very interesting. Regardless of what I think that'd be a very good team.
Is Chris Paul really better than Kyrie Irving? At this stage,
Paul's still an elite player. Well, you wouldn't trade Irving. Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't get rid of Irving. Irving would stay. Chris Paul's a free agent. You got to find out a way to. He's the one guy you'd have to find out a way to make it work. And I'm sure LeBron could figure it out. I don't know. That's just my theory. I know he wants Love out. I know he'll want him out. That's a good way to get. He's said it recently. He wants to, you know, get those four guys together. That's how you do it.
Even if you do that, you don't have the 3-point shooting. And that's what I think was the Achilles heel last night. I mean, the Cavs are having no problem getting to the rim and making tough shots around the hoop. But every time they would get on a little bit of a run, Golden State would hit a couple threes. Cleveland kept trying to match them with the threes and started jacking up their own threes. And just, you literally can't do it, but the best 3-point shooters in the league are all on one team. You can't get 3-point shooting that's better. They got Kyle Korver. Who's better than that? You know, and it's like, it doesn't exist.
Why was Korver sitting out the West? When they're down three after a timeout, you don't go out there with Korver? Is that one of the dumbest things I've ever... I don't care if he's missed 10 in a row. Just having him out there makes it 4-on-4. Insane. It was an incredibly dumb move. Have you heard an explanation as to why?
The end of that game, there were a lot of mistakes. They didn't get the 2-for-1. Kyrie Irving's shot was just terrible. That 3-pointer, that pull-up 3-pointer. And they didn't foul quickly enough either. I mean, the Warriors ran off a bunch of times before they fouled Kevin Durant.
You've been in a locker room with this team?
Yeah, I live in New Orleans. So when they played the Pelicans, I jumped in there and That was a pretty cool experience.
What did you think of the team? I mean, what guys do you like on the team as far as personally? You know, it seemed like good guys, and who aren't you as big a fan of?
I think all the guys on the team are good guys. Like, I think that's one of the strategies of Bulls management is they get these guys that are really high character and that they just like spending time with, you know, and I think that makes a lot of sense. Like, if you continued on in that article that I wrote about Justin Jackson, talking about how much of a disaster those early Bulls teams were, baby Bulls teams, in terms of character, and I mean, that's like the opposite end of the spectrum, right, where you're just totally ignoring character evaluations and only going based on talent, which is, I think, a mistake that Krause made in those years, and I think the Bulls might have swung a little bit too much to the conservative side, but, yeah, as far as the character of the guys, I think all of them work really hard, and, you know, I think they're really good at selecting, at finding those guys who are just, like, really team-first, hard-working guys.
Yeah, I don't think they had a choice when Tibbs was coaching. I mean, when you have an early morning, two-hour shoot-around, and you got a guy who's questionable character, it's not going to work. I mean, I think we saw that with Rip Hamilton. Rip Hamilton hates Tom Thibodeau, and he thinks he's a bump coach. And
that's
that
very
was
true, yeah.
His character at that time was, you know, questionable. They tried it, see if it would work, and it didn't work. But I think that was Bulls, you know, management being limited by Thibodeau's habits, because you have to bring in high-quality guys that are willing to go through long practices like that with him. So,
yeah, I don't think character is an issue for this team. I think they just need more talent.
No, agreed. But I guess I'm on an island. I don't think it's I have no problem with 1 year or 2 year deals. I had no problem with them getting in Wade. I know I can sense you're not a big Wade guy, and yeah, I'm just curious as to why. That's one thing I always wanted to ask the anti Wade guys. What did you dislike about him so much?
Well, I mean, he doesn't play any defense. The one thing that he brings is volume scoring and shot creation, which is valuable in the right situation, but it's not really valuable when you have Jimmy Butler on the wing too. And if you look at like his scoring efficiency, it just was not very good. It is below league average. So I think that he's still like a very, very useful player in the right situation, but it's just not the Bulls. I mean, you need to like have some 3-point shooting out there, and he doesn't provide any, and that's like one other spot in the starting lineup where you're just not spreading the floor out for Butler at all. So I don't know, like the signing didn't make sense. I was really, really against it the second it happened, and it's just like such a poor situation for both sides. I think
I would counter that he does bring the ability to get to the free throw line. He only averaged 30 minutes a game, did average 18 points, which is still, you know, he's a threat as a scorer, and I thought he had a number of good games on the offensive end. And I thought you saw it in the playoffs. I thought in the playoffs he was the guy who put the dagger in the Celtics in game two. He had a fantastic offensive game five. I do agree, yeah, he's not what he was on defensive end. He's not given 100% during the regular season, but in the playoffs, he still was one of the leaders at the guard position in block shots. He still does some good things. You know, he's near the end of his career, no doubt about it, but a great guy off the court. That's a good example, I think, for the most part, although, you know, we did have that problem with Jimmy and him when they lost, you know, went to Instagram, the Instagram issue, and, you know, when they lost in frustration. I just think he's a good guy, and I'm glad he signed. I mean, I know I'm in the minority here, and if you picks up his... the collective groan in Chicago is going to be so loud when he picks up that option, if he does pick up that option. I'll be the only one like, oh, I have no problem with it. I'd rather see...
I mean, he's still one of the best players. It's just he's making $23.8 million if he picks up that option. I mean, he was already the highest paid athlete in Chicago last year. I think it's probably going to be the same this year. I don't really follow baseball, but I think he's still making more than anyone else in town, and it's just way too much money to pay for a guy who, you know, he's not even an all-star.
Yeah, I agree, and he won't be playing 30 minutes a game, you know, but I won't lose any sleep. You know, if it was a 4-year deal, yeah, I'd be bummed out. It's basically a 2-year deal. I'd rather be paying him than be paying, you know, some other guy, some average shooting guard, overpaying some average shooting guard. So,
yeah, I'd rather have him than Deng, for sure. Deng or Noah, like, those would have been way worse decisions with that money.
Yeah. And there was a significant amount of the fan base that was just angry when we didn't sign Noah, and I was wondering why. I mean, he was horrific the last 2 years there, and I'm shocked he got that much from the Knicks. I think we're going to see the same thing happen with Nico, and if he gets more than $15 million a year, adios.
I am 100% with you. That's the number, I think. Anything over 15, it's just, I mean, I like Mirotić a lot, but you can't overpay for a player that's been so inconsistent.
Yeah, especially bad in the playoffs, too. His career playoff numbers are just an embarrassment. And he has played, believe it or not, a significant amount of games. So, Steph, can't thank you enough for jumping on the Chicago Bulls. Where can everybody find you? Twitter handle, email, and on Athletic?
Me on Twitter, at Steph No, and I write for The Athletic. It's a subscription-based site. We're about 2 years old now, so go to theathletic.com, follow them at The Athletic Shy. We have a lot of former ESPN Chicago writers. We cover all the major sports, so yeah, give both of those accounts a follow.
Thank you, brother. Mark, anything else you wanted to add?
I do not. I appreciate you jumping on the show, and hopefully you can join us again sometime.
I'd love to, and yeah, thank you guys for having me on. I said this, I think, before we started recording, but I've been listening to the show for a while, a couple years now. I think you guys do a really great job informing the fans, and yeah, it was my pleasure to chat with you guys.
We appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, brother. Have a great night, my man. And